Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 261 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I'm really excited to bring you this interview with Chad Franks from Schmidt Family Barbecue in BK of Texas. I've wanted to talk to him for a long time because I was curious how everything happened, how this restaurant came about. And it was started by Keith Schmidt, Susie, his wife, who's a Schmidt, as well as John Fullalove, who was from Smitty's. He was one of the first people on the cover of Texas Monthly for barbecue. I have a Pat Sharp interview, and I'll put a link below, and she shows the cover with John on it. And so I didn't really know all the history about this restaurant. They're open 7 days a week. They ship via Gold Belly, so they ship all across the United States. They ship with DoorDash, so you could have food delivered if you're in the area within a certain vicinity, I'm sure. But mostly it's interesting to get inside Chad's head because he's very analytical about this, and he's straightforward, and he's very open and honest about everything. And every question that I asked him, he gave a very detailed answer. If you're going to open a restaurant, this is an integral interview, I feel, to listen to, because he gives a lot of advice and a lot of things about the numbers and how important it is to stay on top of things. So I'll let things pan out during the interview. Thank you so much, Chad, for taking the time. I know you guys are going to enjoy this. And the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast and YouTube show is brought to you by Centex Smokers. They're based out of Luling, Texas. He's been welding since he was a kid, and he's a master welder. He's doing awesome stuff, has done stuff for Ronnie Killen, as well as two things for Ronnie Killen, as well as Mel Kaysen. He just posted something for Burnt Bean Company in Seguin that looks amazing. Beautiful, beautiful craftsman. So check him out. It's Centex_Smokers. On Instagram, Centex_smokers, Centex Smokers. And if you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out. Hit the bell too, notification. That way they come up in your feed. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with tons of stuff. But at the end, stay safe, stay sane. Thanks so much for listening and watching.
I love hearing everybody's stories, especially the personal stories, you know, yeah. how what goes on in their personal life and how they got to where they're at and everything. So it's
That's what I find the most intriguing, is that it's most people haven't come from a barbecue background. And right. I think that's what's fun, because it shows that almost anyone can do this. It's just, you have to work really hard. It's
exactly. Yeah. And I'm one of those type of people that really didn't come from a barbecue background. When I started to, I've pretty much heard of, you know, listened to all your podcasts.
Really? Wow. Thank you.
Especially now, since I moved back to, we moved back to Lockhart recently.
Did you?
Yeah, in July. And, you know, I was born and raised here in Lockhart.
What was that like growing up in Lockhart?
Oh, you know, it was just a small town, you know. Everybody knew everybody, you know, small school, of course. You know, everybody got along, which is great. And I think it's still like that to this day. You know, moving back, there's a lot of, you know, I think I graduated with 170 people in our class. And, you know, but most of us either live here or in the Austin area. So we're all, you know, when Facebook came out, that really tied us all back together to communicate. Yeah, it was great, great growing up here. Like I said, really, really didn't know much about the barbecue scene growing up. You know, we went and ate, but it wasn't nowhere near the popularity that it is today. So it was just just a place to go get you a hot link and a couple of slices of bread, and you know, that was your lunch. You know, maybe get a piece of cheese if you were good that day.
So it wasn't, you weren't even, you had no concept of that, the enormity of how people were getting, like how crazy barbecue has become.
Oh, not at all. And I guess it started taking off maybe in the mid 80s or late 80s, mm-hmm. when my wife's dad, Don Schmidt, and her uncle Rick, which we're coming from Rick Schmidt's gun room. We bought his place in Lockhart.
Oh.
You know, Rick passed away, I think it's 3 years ago in February. And so, you know, Keith, you know, had this place, and, you know, we said, you know, if you ever decide to sell it, we would love, you know, first shot at it. And sure enough, it came to fruition about July. And so, yeah, we're living on Rick Schmidt's place here. It's a beautiful 53-acre place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're only about 2 miles of town, but it seems like we're out in the middle of nowhere.
Do you think this is the place, and also, too, around on your right corner, I could see over the gun safe.
That's my gun safe, and, you know, I love the old wood paneling.
I love that, too.
It reminds me of my dad. You know, I grew up in the oil field industry. I'm third-generation oil field hand.
Okay.
And so I remember his offices in the 80s had this down in Luling.
It does look like that, yeah. There's a wood yard that has, their office is just exactly like what
you're. Exactly, and I told my wife, she wanted to change it. I'm like, oh no. She didn't have the grasp of, I mean, this takes me back to my childhood.
Yeah, definitely.
My dad's office is down in Luling. But yeah, I grew up in an oil field. You know, I'm a third generation oil field hand. You know, my dad started taking me, you know, with him probably, heck, whenever I could walk. He'd load up my little toys. I'd have trucks and dozers. He was a dozer operator. And what he would do in the early 80s was dig pits for drilling to drill wells down in the Victoria area. And so I would go with him. And then finally, he started training me on running dozers, you know, probably 12, 13 years old, you know, D7, D8 Caterpillars. And, and so I started doing that. And then we got into the water transfer business for fracking. We were on the supply side of the water. And what we would do, we would transfer the water at high rates to frack wells. And we've done that all over the state.
Your company would supply the piping and everything, or you'd already have that and bring it?
Yeah, we would transfer through 6-inch aluminum lines. They're about 30. They came in 30-foot, 40-foot lengths.
Yeah, I've always wondered.
And so based on the, you know, the amount of rate they wanted, you know, barrels per minute, that's how many lines we would lay. And so we had these big Detroit engines with these big centrifugal pumps. And so normally the manifold that comes off, you know, we could lay four lines. And with those four lines, as long as it wasn't too far of a distance from the water source to the well, you know, our pumps could get 100 to 125 barrels a minute.
Wow.
And so we kind of had a niche on that market for a while in the when he got into that. I guess it was 90. He had done it in the 80s, worked for a man who actually owned all this land before he sold it off to Rick and some other guys around here. And so he sold it to my dad in 91. I was right about 21 at the time. I never forget, we had to go to the bank and borrow $300,000. And that was an ungodly amount of money. And our bank note was like $3,000 a month.
Oh, man.
How are we going to do it? And luckily, in the early 90s, the boom just hit and it just took off. And so anyway, we had some success with that. But of course, you know, the oil business, it goes up and down. And then finally, I guess about 98, I got out of it because I've seen two or three busts, and I wanted something a little more, you know, a little more long-term, consistent. Mm-hmm. So I went and got a job with TxDOT, Department of Transportation for the state.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so I started out low man on the totem pole. I think I made $7 and something cents an hour. And mind you, I have a degree in business as well, but my passion is I love manual labor. And so anyway,
you know what? There's something really, really satisfying about that.
And it is. It's an appreciation for it. And I love running equipment. You know, I've always ran dozers, backhoes, motor graders, dump trucks.
I was going to ask, when you were a kid doing that, because when I drive by any of those what you just referred to, I want to play on those. I want to use them. And I would love to have land where I could just buy a bunch and mess around. Did you feel like you were a big kid, or was it because it was a job?
No, it was like, it was a little bit of both, a big kid. And there's just something satisfying about, you know, creating something from nothing, you know, and whether you're building a road or digging a stock pond or just clearing brush, you know, there's just something satisfying about doing that. And so I've always loved the blue collar aspect. You know, it's ironic, growing up, hated it. I wanted to be the businessman and the nice clothes and the khakis and the pointy toe shoes. And I tried that and it just didn't work out of college. I went to college, you know, played a little football there and got a degree in business. You know, that's what I wanted to do. You know, I did not want any part of the oil field or working, because it's hard work. And, you know, when you're a teenager, when you get to be a teenager, early 20s, you want to go out and have fun.
Yeah.
And so when you're living the oil field life, it's early mornings, late nights, living out of a suitcase most of the time. And so there wasn't really much time for socializing. But as you get older, you know, you kind of feel appreciation. Like I said, everybody, you know, I'll go to barbecue festivals and, you know, I've got a humongous trailer pit and, you know, I can park it anywhere I want. Sometimes I help guys park theirs and they go, "Where did you learn how to back trailers and drive these trucks?" I'm like, "Well, when you get yelled at a lot when you're 12, 13 years old and not know what you're doing, you figure it out after a while." And so
that's a great talent to have, though. Not everyone could, because it's you have to get your mind, it's backwards. It is reverse.
And that was my problem, looking out of those mirrors. Yeah. I was always going the opposite way. But yeah, like I said, I got yelled at a lot as a kid. My dad was pretty firm, like I said. He He never laid a hand on us, but boy, when that voice got loud, you knew he meant business.
There's something specific about that from my dad, right. Especially back then.
And he was, you know, he's a mountain of a man. And but never, like I said, never touched us. It's just, you do this. And we're like, yes, sir. And so anyway, there's just something satisfying about, you know, swinging sledgehammers and packing heavy pipe and chains and boomers and running equipment. And I miss it to this day. I actually, when the Eagleford kicked off down here, let's see, probably 2010, I left TxDOT. I actually started out on, you know, backstory, I got off, you know, started low man on totem pole. I ended up going into the engineering department with TxDOT, got back in the office. I was an auditor and I would calculate all the materials that went into the roadway projects out of the engineering department, Austin. And so after being a small business owner and working with government, I tried to treat it as my own business. You know, I cared that much and I just saw all the, you know, taxpayer waste where you're allocated so many millions of dollars and you have to spend it, which never made sense to me. Hey, why don't we just carry it over? You know, no, we got to spend this. So, hey, let's go stripe this road that we just striped 6 months.
That's got to kill you.
And it ate me up, you know, just seeing all this waste. So I was like, I just really couldn't take it anymore. So my dad and my brother-in-law, they got it going again. Of course, when I'm out of it, they just kill it with this water transfer. It grows exponentially. And so I went back, helped them out. And so while we were getting this barbecue thing kicked off, anyway, I got to work about 2 years out there with the guys again. And it was a lot of younger guys. And it was just, I enjoyed it, you know.
Where were you living at the time?
We were living in the Bee Cave area.
The Bee Cave area, okay.
Austin, you know, because my wife, we got together later in life. We got together in 2008, 2007. And so anyway, we lived in that area. She lived in the Austin area. And so we lived out in... you know, the Driftwood area. And so I would, you know, leave there and I'd spend a week. We have an RV, and so I'd keep an RV out of my dad's place, work there a week, come home a week, and kind of did that game for a little bit while we were trying to get barbecue going. And then...
So at that time, were you guys going to open Schmidt Family Barbecue? Or?
Yes, when I left TxDOT, because like I say, it was a great job. I was with TxDOT, man, it was almost 13 years, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, I could... You know, I would be able to retire. I'll be 50 this year, so two more years I'd have been eligible. And but you know what? I don't regret it. I just love being. You know, I grew up in small business and love being a small business owner.
As you were transitioning, you guys talked about, hey, let's open this business. Like, were you looking at locations in Bee Cave, and were you?
Yes, and that was the problem. We wanted to be in the Bee Cave area. My wife lived in Southwest Austin at the time, and so she had family and friends out in the Bee Cave area, and we knew there wasn't anybody out there yet, and so we wanted to go somewhere where nobody was, and you know, we had some ties there. And so anyway, it took. I bet we looked at every piece of property in Bee Cave. We just could not make a deal work. I mean, real estate is just, it is ridiculous up there.
Yeah, so because it was pushing people out of central Austin, further and further away from.
Right, exactly. There's not much out there. And it's slowly growing. They're really proud of that dirt out there. And so anyway, we were about to give up. I mean, I think we went through 11 different spots, two different developers, and we just couldn't get a deal to work. And so finally, the mayor reached out. I think her name was Zelda Auslander at the time. That's a unique name. She's since moved to Florida and hooked us up with a man by the name of Adrian Overstreet, who purchased the Hill Country Galleria, which is the mall out there that went into bankruptcy. And so fortunately, he was one of those old school attorneys that, you know, back in the day, he brought his clients and they came to Kreitz Market on Fridays and ate barbecue there. And as soon as he heard Kreitz Market, hey, let's do something here. And so anyway, once we got that deal done, he did a build a suit for us. We're on the hard corner of State Highway 71 and BK.
Okay.
As soon as you're coming in, like you're headed out towards Spicewood, Orlando. And so we have a nice corner right there. We got a deal done, and he built us a, at first he wanted 15,000 square foot, and we're like, no way. And so when we decided planning this, it was me, Susie, Keith Schmidt, who is Rick's son, who owns Kreitz and was Kreitz owner at the time. He had bought it from his dad, Rick. And then John Fullilove, who was Nina's son, formerly of Smitty's. We were all, Susie was kind of the person, when we got together, like I said, she didn't come to Lockhart much. I was in Lockhart. She's one of them that kind of, she brings family together. And so we all got together and decided to do this as a partnership with their help because they had the background. I had no restaurant experience and no barbecue experience. You know, I grew up with my dad. My dad was a big competition cook. But back then, it was your little Lockhart and Luling and Gonzales and Hallettsville festivals. It was more of, hey, let's go drink some
like
beer.
Like a get-together, yeah, yeah.
Well, barbecue, we'll see what happens. Back when barbecue, you know, it was really fun. Now I hear it's just really competitive,
super competitive,
really expensive.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I grew up going to those cook-offs, but never had an interest in it. And tell you the truth, I hate cooking. I love smoking, though. There's something about fire and that magic with the smoke and the heavy pits. I love that part of it. I love smoking meat. If it were up to me, we would have a side one in the place. It would be old school barbecue. I love that. I couldn't tell you how to make any of my sides. If my kitchen staff left, you wouldn't have a side one. We would just eat meat. And I'd probably go out of business because everybody loves sides.
And for people that might not know, John Fullilove was on the cover of Texas Monthly Magazine
He might have been the he might have been the first one in barbecue to be on the cover. He was. And I tell you what, John was he was great for barbecue. I mean, he had the look. He looked like the big heavy butcher. He was great, very intelligent, and knows the history inside and out. His sense, you know, taking a step back from barbecue, which is a shame because he was great for the industry and could tell you the stories. He remembers everything about Papa Schmidt, you know, the original owner of Wright's, who went, the story, went to work there in 1936. He can just tell you everything that Papa Schmidt did. Now, one thing he wanted to do is run it exactly like how they did it back then. And Susie Keith and I, we knew that we couldn't do it that way. We had to change a little bit or it wouldn't work. Yeah. And surprisingly, I set it up more like what was going on in Lockhart, but a little bit different. And that still wasn't good enough. As soon as we opened, oh my God, people wanted chicken. People wanted turkey breasts. People wanted pulled pork. And back then, you know, we opened in October of 2013. Hell, I didn't know what pork butt was. I'm serious. I didn't know what a pork shoulder, pork butt was. I tell you what, we started cooking. You know, we had to evolve and change real quick or we would have got run out of business. Because my clientele up there, totally different. You know, we tried to order by the pound. That confused everybody. We even had directions up there how to do it. And so,
isn't that amazing that even in Texas, because people will get that when they open up barbecue spots everywhere across the United States, because there's a learning curve. It's not, people aren't used to that whole meat market style, but this is in actual Texas. This is right outside of Austin and people.
We're an hour away. Yeah. And my client base out there, like I said, they came out in droves. God, the first 3 days, I mean, it was 45 an hour late, you know, hour wait to get in and I set it up. We went big, like I said, 7,500 square feet. I have four pits. I have two big old Buleys and two big old close pits. You know, I've got all the walk-in coolers like Kreitz and Smitty's have. I think I have three or four of them where you can store all the product, big dry storage. We had the backing to do it right. Yeah. Between Frost Bank, Susie and I and my family and some of the Schmidt family. And so we went big because we've always, you know, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right or not do it at all, you know. And so we put a lot of money into it. And like I said, my clientele out there, they were driving up cars I've never seen but on TV. Bentleys and Ferraris and Porsches. You know, I've seen a Porsche. But
still, it's just interesting that
you don't see it in Lockhart, Texas. Like I said, I drive a one-ton dually. Driven one all my life, might be the only one in BK's. You know, I got to take up two spots when I park. So I was a fish out of water, and I had my big cowboy hat on, and I'm out there, and they're looking at me like, "Who is this hillbilly son of a gun here?"
Weren't you guys at the beginning? We'll go over your menu, but weren't you guys selling shoulder clawed? And
yes, we did.
I remember reading a Daniel article a long time.
Yeah, we did, and like I said. Fortunately, Keith let me come down there and intern down at Kreitz. I did that for one summer going into this. I worked with Roy, and a funny story behind that, and I know Roy listened to it. Roy has had so many people come in. Of course, they help people open different families, you know, like Lockhart Smokehouse and then the places in New York, Hill Country.
Oh, Hill Country, yeah, gotcha.
Mark Glosserman and them. And I went in there with my mentality is I need to do this like I'm here full time and it's mine. And so I had the Big Chief tablet. I drew pictures of how we put the meat on. There's seven pit. They have eight, but they usually run seven. I diagrammed it. I'm real OCD and I take a lot of notes. And so I wrote everything down and I was in his hip pocket and I worked just as hard as he did, pushing meat and cooking meat. And hell, he thought I was trying to take his job. And he goes, Chad, nobody's ever come here and stayed this long. They come for one day and leave. He goes, you try to take my job? I'm like, no, Roy. I'm like, I'm going to open my own place.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I tell you what, Roy is great. I learned a lot from him. And I tell you what, if anybody can work harder than him,
there
ain't a man in the world that can. Because working at Christ on a Saturday is harder than any day in the oil field, manual labor. I'm telling you what, it is hot. And if you're in there working hard and pushing all that meat, you know, it ain't like you have platter racks and you're putting your pans and moving briskets. When you're at Christ Market, you're moving with the meat pins from pit to pit. You just grab two at a time and they're dripping down your forearms and it is
it's nonstop.
It is nonstop.
And because they got buses of people. Well, back before COVID, they were getting
tons. Oh my God, and that building's 25,000 square feet.
It's massive.
It is huge. And Smitty's, I believe, is 10. And so our thinking is we wanted to be somewhere in between on capacity. Mm. And so luckily we got down to 7,500 square feet. And so we can seat a couple of hundred. And then we have a private room for events that works out well.
Did Roy, because I remember when I interviewed Roy, he talked about working construction. Did he work on the place that you're at right now?
No, this was built afterwards. Rick's house was built in 94.
Okay. I was trying to tie it somehow. I thought maybe, because he had mentioned, I think it was Keith. Did he work at Keith's house one time maybe or something? Or
no, he worked at my father-in-law's house, Don.
Oh, Don's. Okay.
Yeah, Don Schmidt. That's my father-in-law. He's still in town here and he still lives there.
Okay, that's what it is. Yeah. I knew there was some connection.
Yeah, Susie, my wife, her family moved here back here in 85 to, you know, going to, they were out on the West Coast. And then in San Antonio, he was a real estate guy. He hit it at the right time and did very well. But he came back and him and Rick bought the business from their dad and he got into barbecue. And well, and Susie and them moved here in 85. And so Roy worked for a man by the name of Danny Buckner, who is Rick's best friend. And he's the house builder in Lockhart.
Gotcha. There it is. That's what it is.
The high end house builder. And so, and Danny's still alive and actually still runs his cows out here. He's got 12 mama cows and a bull and, of course, all his heifers and calves. So we let him stay on the place. And he was real worried he's going to have to leave because he's had his cattle here. He's been tied to this place we're on for 30 years.
But that's the Texas way. That's
the Texas way. And we told Danny, and, you know, of course, when you come to Lockhart and you got land, every Harry, Dick, John out there, family, hey, can we get that place and put our cattle on there? I'm like, oh.
Oh, that's a thing. I know. That's funny. It makes sense.
Danny's been here forever, and you know what? Yeah, we don't even charge him. We just appreciate the ag exemption, you know, because we lived on Hamilton Pool Road. We sold our house, and fortunately, it was a great market during COVID. Anyway, once we sold our house and got down here, we just we just appreciate the difference in taxes here. I mean, it's ridiculous the difference how inexpensive it here in Caldwell County it is. Of course, the locals will think, oh my God, our taxes are going up.
Of course,
you ought to see what we pay.
It's all relative.
And I'll tell them too, and what we pay on rent on our building, and they're like, holy hell, how do you stay in business? I'm like, you got to run it tight.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be there, and you know, you got to do your own books, and that's what I do. When we opened up, we were big. And, I went ahead and hired a GM, the kitchen manager, catering coordinator. Well, you know, the GM and the kitchen manager, you know, they were great, but it wasn't their baby. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's different.
And in barbecue, pennies matter. And so, and you got to watch the pennies. So I ended up downsizing, due to the scale back in business. And so anyway, I just took it all over. You know, when I first opened up, you know, I was doing some of the cooking. I had other people cooking with me.
Was it weird going to work for Kreitz and then coming, like the pits are different. Was that?
And those Buleys, I did not like them at first. There was something, just something. There was it was just, they took longer to season, I guess. They had a funny smell to them. I just assumed it was the, you know, they're 100% insulated. Now I wouldn't trade them for the world. It just took me a while to figure out, and I wish I'd have reached out to, you know, like, say, Stephen Joseph, who's of Riverport, who's been, you know.
Well, that's true.
30-plus years, you know, and he offered to come down, and I'm just one of them guys. I hate asking for help, but God dang, it would have saved me a lot of headache.
Too.
You know, and I didn't know Russell Ragles at the time. Of course, he's a big Beulah guy.
That's true.
Of course, he's probably the biggest Beulah guy. You know, I met him at Smoke Dallas one year, and we got to be pretty good friends. And so I wish I would have reached out to these guys, because I know, you know, I came from Lockhart, where I thought, here, growing up, everybody had secrets and everybody didn't like each other in barbecue.
It was that world, right? Yeah.
It was that world, you know. It was real competitive. Of course, they all do well. You know, they all have lines out the door, but there was just something about it. And, you know, nobody networked. And, of course, we broke that mold.
Yeah, which makes it very unique, I was going to say, because you had John and you had...
Yeah, you know, and, you know, we went to the first... It says the Red Dirt Barbecue Festival. We opened up October 2013. The first one is 2014. And so that really opened my eyes going to that. I'm like, oh, my God, these are a bunch of great guys. And we all go through the same things. You know, I was kind of thinking, man, what am I doing wrong? What is this? And why am I here? And what's going on with this and that? And everybody has the same stories with customers or employees or just issues. And so it was great when the festival scene took off with Red Dirt.
What a great festival, too. I haven't gone, but Chase has invited me every year. And...
Oh, yeah. Chase, I tell you what, Tyler, Texas, you know, I remember out here and you said you might move back to Texas. I'll tell you what, Tyler, Texas.
Thank you. That's actually an interesting. I have a list on my computer of little smaller cities. Yeah.
Take your time and go visit. What's great about Tyler, it's small, but it's large. I mean, it is spread out. There's plenty of place. It's kind of like a San Angelo or Abilene.
Okay.
But with that small town feel. Oh my God, we enjoy that. Of course, we enjoy Smoke Dallas, and Dale over there does a great job. We enjoy Pints in the Park. We do that one, and then there's a little one we do at South by Southwest. But yeah, we're just really blessed. You know, each year we keep getting invited back because, you know, that's the only time I network. I really, when I barbecue and do my business, I'm all in. But when I'm off, I'm off. And so there's a lot of work I do around here, you know, having property or even when I didn't, you know. So I don't have that time to load up and go visit people and eat other barbecue. And so I look forward to the festivals because that's when I catch up with everybody. That festival scene kind of opened my eyes. Like, hey, this, you know, everybody in this business, they're just like me, you know, just good old boys or gals, you know, everybody. Everybody helps each other out. And so started asking you a few tips here and there and people asking me, and, you know, we kind of pick and choose, you know, what we get from these things. Yeah. And so it's helped me tremendous.
How did, so the menu in the beginning and then the menu now or the menu pre-COVID, how did it change?
Yeah. The menu when we first opened was your straight Central Texas barbecue, kind of what you had here, and you got paper and, you know, we actually added forks. That was a big fight when we were going to open this up. I'm like, we have to have forks.
That's so funny.
And we have to have sauce. And so, boy, that was a doozy. And so, sure enough, we opened with that, but that wasn't even good enough. I mean, like, where's our plates? That's it. And, of course, I've known Rick a long time. Him and my dad were good friends away from barbecue, and I got to visit with Rick a lot when I was working at Kreitz, and he gave me a lot of tips. And, you know, and Rick was a stern man. You know, it's either take it or hit the road, Jack. Mm-hmm. And I kind of ran with that mentality. And I had that oil field background where you kind of got to be rough. And I was like that with my customer base. And you can't do it. Hell, they weren't coming back. And so anyway, I'm like, ooh, I better tone it down and give them what they want. And so anyway, we added plates and we added, said pulled pork, chicken. If they wanted it, I cooked it. I mean, at one time I was doing prime rib. I mean, we were doing everything, the big beef. Ribs. Oh, that was another story. The big beef ribs, you know, the three bone. Oh my God. Downtown, you can't sell enough of them. Come out the bee cave. Oh my God. I want one of those set on scale. Oh my God. I'm not paying that.
Exactly. That's
funny. And then you have to take it back. I'm like, oh my God. And so I went to a four bone chuck, a little small one, and those were selling pretty well, but there's just no money in it. Mm-hmm. And and it's just a novelty, and I wasn't really selling enough
That's
to.
what a lot of people don't realize too, is that people aren't making money off those beef ribs. It's
No, and I'm a businessman first, and when I came out of the gate in 2013, my prices were high, and because I know, okay, I need 30% food for 25, 30%, and a lot of people say it's not obtainable. It is. You gotta price your meat right. You gotta price your sides right. And you got to really watch your costs and calculate them and be looking at it daily. And you know what? Keep you three or four purveyors. I have Sysco, US Foods, Ruffino's, Benny Keith. I learned it. That's the Lockhart way. You bring them in and you negotiate weekly. Of course, since then, I've tapered back because I buy all my meat from Mike Ruffino, and they are great.
The Ruffino
And
meats, yeah.
oh my God, I trust him 100%.
That's someone I should reach out to too. I've been thinking
Oh
about.
yeah, he is awesome. That whole family, I met them when we went. I helped open Kreitz and Bryan when that opened up, and it was just right across the road. And Mike lives here in Cedar Park, and I called him up. I'm like, man, you're a great guy. Let's talk and see if we can do some business, because I just these meat guys with these bigger box stores, they just
Yeah.
fluctuate too much. You can't do that. And I got to where I wasn't buying the volume like, say, a Kreitzer Smithies does, where you really negotiate. So I had to pare that back. And so, and actually the Ruffino meats have taken my product to the next level. I buy all of my meats there except for my half chickens. There's something about a marinated chicken I get from Sysco that just you
Hey,
can't
it
dry. You
works.
can't you can't dry it out. I mean, you can burn it and you can cook it hot, whatever, and it's still gonna be juicy. I'll bring some home and reheat, and it's still juicy because chicken dries out. But other than that, everything comes from Mike Ruffino. And you know what? I ain't got to worry about him price gouging me or trying to get on me. His word's his word, and the price is the
And
price.
that's
So,
nice to have that. That's an
oh, it is. I mean, that's just one thing off my plate, because like I said, I do all the ordering. I cook 4 days a week. I do all the HR. I do all the payroll, all the financials, all the data entry. Anything and everything, take out trash, sweep floors, whatever it takes. And so
No, this is great. This is a
I
bit.
got rid of all, the top level thinking I had to have this and this and this. And I'm like, you know what? If you manage your time and run it efficient, my bottom line's actually turned out really well since taking it back over. And I've had it for probably the last 3 or 4 years. And I enjoy it too, because, I keep, I have a pulse on it every day. I mean, I'm so tedious to where, I'm clearing my checks every day in my just being OCD in my checking account just to make sure I don't miss anything, because I do wear a lot of hats. And so I just
You know, it's better to be that way. I think that a lot of people run food businesses from the hip.
I learned that real quick and create some forms that help you out. We have a nice form that, with our pars every day, and I document what we cook every day. I document the weather. Is it a holiday? Do we have Super Bowl coming up? And I learned that from Roy. He has his journals, and boy, I wish I could get a hold of those down the road if he ever
I
gives them away, which he won't, because those are going to be those are novelty items.
yeah
I mean, he had.
that's part of the my barbecue Hall of Fame, or if there's like a
Oh
museum, a Lockhart
yeah,
Museum of barbecue, that would go in there.
exactly. So I got that from him, but I changed it to fit us. I can go back and look, and so I'm looking at that every day on what to order. And so where a lot of restaurants make their mistakes, they're over or keeping too much inventory. Fortunately, I try to buy, they buy twice a week, and I've got the cooler space. I used to buy once a week because I could hold it, but I like that twice a week where I just keep it turning.
Are you guys making your own sausage too?
No, we don't. We actually we buy Kreitz sausage,
Okay.
the original, and a jalapeno. I'd love to make sausage, but out in Bee Cave, that area is known for having a hard time finding labor. Now, I've been blessed. I have 11 employees, and 10, I would say, okay, 9 out of the 11 have been there since day one, year one.
That's amazing.
And people ask me to come to the chamber and how do you do it and all that. And I'm just small town country, but I'm like, pay them. Pay them what they're worth. If they're good employees, if they have great
That's great
attitudes,
advice.
pay them, treat them fair, firm, and be consistent with them. And so I pay my employees very well. And there's been a lot of times early on where they get paid. I don't take a paycheck. Like I said, fortunately, I'm blessed enough. Susie has had that great job with Dale where, we can actually make this business work where I don't have to take a paycheck. And so anyway, I make sure they're paid, you know, they get paid vacation. And they were like, restaurants don't do that. I'm like, well, this ain't a typical restaurant. Mm-hmm. And this is all transitioning when I had somebody else managing it for me. Tip share. We do tip share. That was a game changer. You know, Susie and I kind of took a step back and our manager's like, nah, they'll make too much money. And we looked at each other like, what kind of philosophy is that? Where they make nobody makes too much money.
If you feel like you're compensated in anything you do, you work harder, you're more invested. Yeah. It's just how, you know, it sounds so simple, but it's true. And it doesn't happen very often.
It's crazy. And it's performance based. You know, we have it where, you know, if somebody's order's messed up, well, you may not make it that day. Or if you're late, you know, it's kind of incentivized as well.
And for sure.
Fortunately, my employees are so great. I haven't had to take anything out in years now since we transitioned to that. So, you know, they might make an extra $3 an hour. And so, you know, I love seeing all these new cars pulling up in my restaurant that they're driving, and you know, it's changed their
lives. And to afford a living, like to make a wage that they can afford things in life without being crazy. That's ideal. That's why would you leave that job?
And they buy in and they treat it as their own. I mean, there's stuff that happens where I know they didn't have to tell me, I would never find out, but they tell me, you know, and you know, I don't have to worry about theft and that goes on in typical restaurants that you hear about. You know, never had to worry about that. Of course, they know I can tell you what a Topo Chico's missing because, like I said, I look at everything.
That's
every
funny.
Day.
Yeah, you're that guy.
I am that guy. Yeah.
But like with the Kreitz sausage, when I worked at the place, one of the places I was referring to in L.A., we had shipped in at the beginning. He was using Kreitz sausage, and I think he stopped making payments, and then Kreitz is like, we're not going to use you. But it was fantastic. It was perfect.
It happens that way all the time. You know, like I said, I'm close to those guys at Kreitz, and it's amazing. Like I said, I think we get 20 days to pay. I pay every 7. You know, mm-hmm. when we go pick up an order, a check goes with them because it just keeps your book straight. And it's, I hate owing anybody. And so, I pay all my bills every 7 days. And that's the beauty of this business. I love this business because you know where you're at weekly. Mm-hmm. You know, you know what your payroll is going to be. You know what you're selling, and you know what you're buying, and you pay each week. Where in the oil field business, working for these big companies, we may not get paid for 90 days. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine and dandy if you're rolling. But once that well shuts down, and then, oh my God, there's no more checks coming in. Then you got to get started again. Definitely. And wait 90 days. And so with restaurants, you can keep that pulse on it, and you're, you know, where you are weekly.
How did COVID affect you?
You know, COVID, it really, at first, of course, I mean, we were down 45% right off the bat. I'm like, holy moly. And so it was actually another time, okay, what can I cut? What can I renegotiate? And so I made some changes there. So anyway, yeah, it affected us bad. We were 45% down. Then we got to about 25, and now we're running about 10. So we're doing pretty well now, and we've since taken on shipping. I wish we would have done it right when this started, because our cousins in Dallas did it, and they were killing it with Goldbelly. And so
your cousins in Dallas are Jill and Jeff,
yeah, Lockhart Smokehouse. And so I never want to take on shipping because, you know what, I already had enough hats, and I didn't want to do it. We've been talking about it before, but with Goldbelly, they streamline everything, so it makes it easy. And so I was all on board. So we started shipping in October, right before the holiday season. And boy, it's a game changer, because one thing with shipping is, you know, I had the pits, I have the cooler space, I have the freezers, I have the back. Of course, I bought a second vacuum seal machine in case one went down. I had everything to do it. A lot of places, fortunately, don't have all that to be able to just take off and start shipping. Mm-hmm. So luckily, I was already set up for it, and it's been great. And we ship everything. Hell, we even ship sides. That guy with Goldbelly, he says you got to ship sides. Nobody's doing it. And of course, yeah, I know why, because it's pain in the butt. Uh-huh. But sure enough, sides have been killing it.
So a place like Goldbelly, like a company like that, will they walk you through the process?
Oh yeah,
because because you're the first, and I know people out here that Goldbelly's reached out, or they've reached out and they've wondered if they should do it.
Oh yeah, I mean. Yeah, 100%. They made it easy. They walked us through it. Their dashboard is very user-friendly. The marketing is big. They do all the national marketing, which is huge. Get your name out there. They tell you where to buy like your insulation packs and stuff to keep
So
it cold.
they help you facilitate that.
Yeah, they facilitate everything. The menu, what people want. Oh, it's been great. And what's nice about it is we do delivery through DoorDash. We brought that back on. I didn't like it at first because of the fees. And I got to thinking, you know what? All right, I paid 25%. I'm just going to mark everything up 25%.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did that. And
specifically for delivery, yeah.
For DoorDash, yeah.
Yeah,
and you know
makes
what?
Sense.
I wish I would have done it right away. Mm-hmm. And so now, I mean, I'm fine with it. And people, God, DoorDash is just as big as our online. We started online during COVID. That's been great.
The POS system do you use?
We use Micros.
Oh, Micros.
Micros, yeah, old school. That's what Kreitz has, so that's what we use. So right now we're using Squarespace, but we're looking to upgrade and change that. It's been working well, but we kind of want to, you know, kind of modernize it a little bit and be able to take tip share on it. We're not able to take tip share through Squarespace, and my employees are losing out on a lot of revenue on tip share through the online.
Do you have a separate area for online pickup and?
Yes, we do. We'll either, what we do is when they call up to the back, they just give us a call and we walk it out to them.
Is indoor seating allowed?
It is. We're at 50% right now.
Oh, wow.
But with my place so huge, I never really filled the place up. So it's pretty much like we're running normal, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, my capacity, you know, I seat over 200. And so, you know, I can keep 30, 40 people in there, no problem.
And what days of the week are you open?
7 days a week. We're only closed Thanksgiving and Christmas, 363 days a year, we're open. Because you know what? Rent's due every day.
That's what I was hoping you would say that. Yeah, that's my favorite when people say, I pay rent for every day.
I think I heard that from Jeff at Lockhart Smokehouse. You know, rent's due every day. We're going to be open every day. Uh-huh. And of course, for us, it makes sense. Our sales, there's not really any dip. Like if there's a drastic shift on a Monday or Tuesday, yeah, we might think about shutting out, but there's some days Monday may be busier than Friday. Right. You just never know out in that area. Out there, to go is huge. I would say even before COVID, 30 to 40% of my business was to go. So if I could have a little old 2,000 square foot building, the bottom line would just be just crazy. Just people like it to go out there. You know, big parties. There's always big parties. We do a lot of, you know, back when people were actually meeting at work, you know, big orders for, you know, business.
Those orders are nice, yeah.
And so we've lost that, but we've made it up with online and shipping. And so really, like I said, right now we're doing fine. We tried the drive-through thing. I saw where Arnis and Mallory set that up. And my building was actually set up to do that with the front and back door. I just didn't have enough English-speaking staff to pull it off. It lasted for 2 days, and we were just spinning our wheels. And so we just had to keep just transitioning and see what made it work. And so, we've kind of accepted kind of the new norm. And, you know, we're paying the rent, of course. You know, back then, you know, the PPP is what bailed us out. And truth be known, if we wouldn't have had that, we probably wouldn't be open right now, because
wow.
our the company that owns us now, Mr. Overstreet, he sold it to I think it's a teacher's retirement company out of California, but they're called CDRE. You know, they still wanted their rent. I'm like, man, that's, you know, that's actually my big, you know, and I don't mind saying it. I paid $35,000, $36,000 a month in rent.
I don't think people, you're the first person that's actually, I think, said this on the show. And you know what's interesting is I knew that I was guessing it was around that because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I'm pretty transparent, and I kind of don't know why people hide a lot of that. To me, I have nothing to hide, you know, and it is what it is, you know, and we went into it and we did, you know, we did our P&Ls and our models and like, you know, we can do this, you know, And so what gets you is the triple net out there. You know, base rent's like $26,250, but when you're paying your property tax estimate, which is $5,300 a month, you know, $60,000 a year, you know.
Yeah.
So, man, if I just had to pay $25,000, oh my gosh, it would be, I'd be having them Lockhart style bottom numbers.
Exactly. That's true. How far off, say you flew into Austin, how far would the drive be?
I'd say probably from Austin, Berkshire, probably about 25 minutes. It's not bad. You know, TxDOT's improved all the freeways through there. And so it's getting to where you can navigate around Austin pretty well to get around it. 183's, you know, dang near finished up all the way to North Austin. You got the toll road. And that's what's
true.
Made it. That's what, and Ben White's a freeway now. And so, and that's really,
it's been a while.
It's nice. They're finishing up the interchange at 183. It can still bottleneck there, but they're almost done. And sure enough, you stay off 35, you're fine. And so you can navigate around Austin pretty well. And that's what the beauty of, people are like, oh my God, you commute from Lockhart to here? I'm like, well, yeah, I did it in Oldfield. This is nothing. It's about 50 minutes in the morning. You know, I leave, I get up at 3. I'm out of my house by 3:20, you know, a little after 4, you know, I'm walking in the door and there's no traffic. And, you know, I'm an older guy. I set my cruise on 60, 65, I stay on the frontage road. I don't pay any tolls and go up to 130 and hit Ben White. And
that's not too bad.
I may bump it up to 65, get a little wild, you know, and it gives me time to listen to podcasts now. Cause before I lived 12 minutes away and, you know, our thinking was when you first open up, you got to be there, which is true. But since then, it's, you know, my staff is great. Like I said, don't have really any one manager. There's two or three people. They all kind of manage themselves. And
after a while, it becomes like a machine. I've noticed that at restaurants, it just, everyone has their task and their the way of doing things. And then they just kind of just goes. It just.
And it works, and they appreciate me, you know, not, you know, micromanaging them. And yeah, of course, if something's wrong, I'm gonna let them know about it. But they do a great job. And if it wasn't for them either, you know, because I can't do it by myself, they're great, you know. And I wouldn't trade any one of them right now. Like I said, they all know their task, and they do well. My other cook, like I said, he started out as a $10 onion slicer, you know, back when we first opened. And I tell you what, he can do anything in that restaurant, even run the POS. And
that's so great.
He's a Brazilian. He's loud, and customers love him. And hell, people think he owns it. Him and another lady that worked for me,
that's
Jan.
Funny.
Hell, they think they're the owners. You know, I'm over there. I came out of the bathroom, of course. You know, I have my apron on and all greasy and dirty. And customers want to talk to the owner. I'm like, I said, see that other guy over there, that other cowboy hat over there? That's him. Oh, thank you, sir. And
so, that's so funny.
I sent the gentleman over there to talk to them. But, you know, I like that. You know, it's not about me, and I don't want it to be about me. Yeah, when you first opened up, yeah, you want to do this, and you pit master this and all that. Now it's like, after being 7 years, I hate that term, you know.
Yeah, so do I. I use it some. So when I write stuff, sometimes I put it, but it makes me cringe. I don't like it.
Oh, I know. I cringe on that. And I was like, you know, I'm a barbecue cook, you know, because I did barbecue classes for income as well early on. Another thing I got from Jeff and Jill up here at Lockhart Smokehouse helped pay the bills. And they were great. And I'm kind of a shy guy. I'd have to drink a couple of Miller Lights before I got up there and got started. But
that's hilarious.
But people loved them because, you know, I told everything, you know, how to do it. And like I said, people think there's all these secrets, and I told them everything.
Do you think you'll do classes again someday?
Or
is that,
know,
not part of the business model?
I probably could. Like I said, I have that post-op room. It's just I got to where I think it ran its course, because we did it for, I think we did it for about 3 or 4 years. Yeah. But I don't know. I kind of like,
well, yeah,
Taylor,
and you don't have
Taylor
to.
Back from, yeah. And I kind of burned out on it. And yeah, it was great income. And I enjoyed the networking. Yeah, like I said, to get that courage up, I'd had a couple beers to to get started. And
you're probably not the only person that does that. At all,
yeah,
at
I
all.
Know.
But do you guys have merch and gift cards and all that?
We do. You know, gift cards have been a big seller. That's helped out. Merch, I'm not too big on merch because that's another expense.
Yeah.
Say if you're, say, a Kreitz Salt Lick, those big restaurants, the merch flies pretty well. And that's another mistake I made going out big. I built this nice high-dollar wooden cabinet with the glass like Salt Lick and had 8 or 10 different shirts and caps and all that. And you're talking thousands of dollars. Yeah, it's marketing, but it really, really didn't work for us. Same with advertising. We pumped a lot of money early on in advertising. And, you know, the best advertising for us has been Facebook. And it's cheap. And so, anyway, like
targeted.
I said, there's so many dollars we just, God, I wish I had back.
I know. But then you learn that way.
You live and learn, yeah.
Yeah,
you live and learn. But, you know, at least you can say you tried, you know. And so, but yeah, we're not big on merch. Yeah, we have some nice shirts and caps, but, you know, we don't, like, I haven't bought any since COVID because, you know, I don't want to spend, you know, $1,000, $2,000. And
but so, if someone comes in, they can get a hat or a shirt.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. We buy nice quality caps and shirts. And the logo looks pretty neat. So, anyway, yeah, they can.
I want to give people an idea as to all the different ways they can get a hold of you, what the address is, again, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, our address is 12532 FM 2244, Beecave, Texas, 78738. You can find us on our website, www.schmidtfamilybarbecue.com, barbecue with a C. That's big for us in Central Texas. You spell it with a C.
Yes.
We're on Instagram at SchmidtBBQ, Facebook as well, Schmidt Family Barbecue. And so, anyway, phone number, you can reach us by phone, 512-263-4060. Like I said, we're very... very customer service friendly, and
7 days a week. How late are you open till?
We're open from 11 to 6:30. Like I said, we have online, we have we utilize DoorDash, and we're on Goldbelly as well. So any way we can make a dollar, we go after. We don't turn anything down. So
what's the furthest place you've shipped via Goldbelly? Do you know?
Hawaii. Yes,
that's cool.
We've sent quite a bit to Hawaii, a lot to California. And a lot to the East Coast. We've damn near hit, just in these few months, damn near all 50 states already.
That's fun.
I just never thought it would do this. And Jeff told us, he said, it will. They've been shipping. I talked to him the other day. They've been shipping to Alaska. I'm like, yeah, we haven't hit Alaska yet, but they get a lot of orders from Alaska. So
I wonder, too, that would be someone from Goldbelly I should interview, because I would love to, just so that way people can know what's going on, because people hear Goldbelly, and I just recently talked to Stacy Franklin, and she was talking about it, and they forever had wanted to ship, but weren't sure if they should, and then hearing that, like when I saw that you guys are on, I'm like, wow, this is something real, like this.
There's something intimidating about setting all that up. Yeah, I think Kreitz, they originally started it, and of course they have their own way of doing it, but we just didn't know how to do it, mm-hmm. and we just didn't have the time to set everything up. Like I said. Yeah, my wife's the Schmidt and the Schmidt Family Barbecue, but you know, she's full time at Dell. If I had her with me, oh my God, she's a rock star. I mean, she is awesome at Dell. I really could use her, but yeah, we can't afford for her to leave Dell. She has a great job and she loves what she's doing. So it's just I just get tired, and we take on a lot already. But Goldbelly streamlined it; they made it so easy.
Price it appropriately, so that way you make your money, and that feels good. And
yeah, and they set up the templates where you fill in the templates, and like I said, they help you every step of the way. So it was a no-brainer.
Can't wait to meet you in person. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too, Kevin. Thank you,
Chad. Thank you.